Michael Lewis has done it again. The author who loves to pull back the curtain to expose the hidden workings and absurdities of businesses from baseball to Wall Street lit up the trading floors a year ago when his book Flash Boys was released in hardcover. High-frequency traders with their rapid-fire algorithms have rigged the market with technology and complexity, he wrote. So no, you happy pensioners down in Florida watching CNBC. Anyone cannot play this game, whatever you might believe. Well, we wanted to check in with Lewis to see what his indictment of the markets had wrought outside of some very entertaining financial television. He said, not much. High-tech trading may have originally been a means for leveling the playing field, but it hasn't worked out that way.
The early days of eliminating the middlemen on the New York Stock Exchange, I think it was outsiders who were, you know, freaks and geeks who saw that there was a better way to do it. And you could disrupt this whole industry with technology and actually save investors a lot of money. That all happens before my story starts. My story starts really in 2008 when the people who are the masters of the electronic stuff, the computer guys who design the systems, have taken over the market. I mean, the market's all electronic. And they start to recreate a similar sort of grift that the old system had. They at least figure out ways to exploit glitches in the system so that they can reintroduce lots of unnecessary trading, intermediation, of the same sort that existed before. The characters in the story of my book are kind of counter-revolutionaries. They are all technical people. They're all people who are comfortable writing code and understanding code. But they've become upset that the market didn't become what it was supposed to become. It was supposed to become a place where you eliminated this kind of scalp that goes on in the market. And instead, the scalp just became electronic.
So instead of, you know, J.P. Morgan making a side deal at a drunken dinner in nanoseconds, the software will do the same thing.
You know, in essence. I mean, with the software, so instead of when you give your big stock market order to some bank to execute, instead of the bank's traders seeing the order physically, it's built into the code now. In extraordinary ways, in ways you could never see if you weren't inside the market. And so the main character of this book is inside the market. Brad Katsuyama is the head stock market trader at the Royal Bank of Canada. One day in 2006 or 2007, when he looks at his trading screens, the markets on his trading screens are accurate. You know, if the screens say he can buy 10,000 shares of Microsoft at 20, if he hits a button, he buys them 10,000 shares of Microsoft at 20. The next day, after the scalp has been built into it, when he hits a button to buy those shares, they vanish. They vanish because they know he wants to buy the shares. The high-frequency traders who sit in the middle of the market have detected his signal and are front-running it. Mm. And it is happening so fast that unless you actually have granular data about, I mean, like microsecond-level data about what's happening in the market, you don't see the grift.
You remember the movie The Sting?
Yep.
There's the great scam that they do at the end where they are playing the horse races, and they know the outcome of the horse race a few minutes before the actual information is disseminated to everyone else, and they get somebody to bet on the wrong horse knowing the outcome.
Right.
And rip him off.
Right.
Is this the software
yes.
version of the Sting?
It's exactly the software
oh
version of
God,
Sting.
Oh, my God. That's so
this
wild.
This is what it is. That you have essentially you think of it as a class system in the stock market. You have a handful, and it really is a handful, of high-frequency trading firms and high-frequency arms of the trading arms of the big banks that buy fast access to faster information from the exchanges that make a lot of money selling them this faster access. So they get a picture of the market and no market price movements before investors do. Now, the difference is a matter of milliseconds. They know, but it's enough because they have a right to trade against you essentially at a stale price, and they know it's the stale price. So if you're in the market to buy Microsoft at $20 a share or wherever it is, and they know it just fell to $19.99, they will sell it to you at buy it at $19.99 and sell it to you at $20. It's a very valuable thing, having a few millisecond advantage. In fact, in one way to think about the book is just a story about the value of a millisecond.
The value of a millisecond.
Yeah.
When this book came out in hardcover, there were some spectacular theatrics that went with you going on some of the financial channels.
Which had nothing to do with me. You know, I was dragged into these theatrics that were orchestrated by others. But yes, they were.
And there was this huge debate, which probably was an important debate to have, about whether the stock market was completely rigged. And there you were in the middle, and it seemed as though CNBC wanted to get you.
Yep.
You know, Michael and Brad, shame on both of you for falsely accusing literally thousands of people and possibly scaring millions of investors in an effort to promote a business model. Now, Sue, it's a very, very old tactic to try to build a business on the planks of fear, mistrust, and accusation. This has certainly taken that to a new level.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I thought I was going on an interview just to be interviewed by the host of CNBC, but in role the president of the BATS Stock Exchange, the exchange that's on the other side of the Lincoln Tunnel, created by high-frequency traders, basically for the benefit of high-frequency traders. And he was there to tell me how shameful it was. I'd written a book that undermined confidence in the American financial system and so on and so forth. A line of attack, which, by the way, I found breathtaking, because I just thought, did anybody actually think anybody in America trusts Wall Street anymore? I mean, my God, is anybody paying attention to what we just came through? But anyway, that was the first line of attack. And thank God the main character of my book, Brad Katsuyama, was on the show with me, because it's a very complicated subject. It's very easy to go on the television and just lie, and nobody will call you on it because they're not quite sure. And I had with me maybe the world's authority on how the stock market actually works and how the exchanges actually work. And in the course of this shout fest, he started
fabulous.
It was a real. He was just shouting the whole time. Brad asked him some pointed questions about how his exchange worked, and he actually gave the wrong answers. He misinformed the public about how his exchange worked.
96% of the volume executed on our system is by customers using those data products, and that runs the gamut from bulge bracket firms, retail brokerage firms and their advocates and intermediaries. You don't understand that a market has always had intermediaries. Since the beginning of financial markets at scale, there's going to be someone who at the time needs to be in the middle.
Can I tell you whether this is incorrect?
This is 96% you're referring to is the proprietary feeds that you're absolutely that everybody's
right.
been arguing
no, no.
about.
So, yeah. so Brad and then Michael.
There's a difference between a subscriber using a proprietary feed versus what a pegged order, a priced order, price sliding, anytime the exchange is responsible
for
pricing
data. You use the same data that we do.
Absolutely not. You guys use the SIP to price trades in the
That is not what true.
Funny enough, I think he'd have been fine even doing that, because the anchors on CNBC didn't call him on it.
Yeah. They probably didn't even understand
They just let it go. The point Brad was getting at when asking the questions, is it true that you provide a kind of slow, in ordinary investors with a slow picture of the market and high-frequency traders with a faster picture of the market? And he said no. But the next day, the New York Attorney General got involved.
Yeah.
You can't lie about your business on national television, you know? And they had, and BATS had to print a correction. And this man lost his job a few months later. But if the New York Attorney General had not gotten involved, I think no one would have been the wiser. I think the audience would have been left thinking, I'm not sure who's telling the truth there. Which is the problem. It's not the problem just with the complexity of the stock market. This is a problem that arises out of the complexity of the financial system. At some point, it gets so complicated that what you saw happen in that CNBC shoutfest happens, you know, inside of in conversations inside the SEC or on Capitol Hill, and the audience, the SEC commissioners or the senators who are trying to decide whether we do something about this, are baffled. They don't know which side is telling the truth, and it's too complicated to untangle. So that we pay a huge price for this complexity. It means the public can't really, it has a hard time understanding how the system works, and therefore has a hard time having a view on what should be done about it.
Two things before we go. One, as I watched those theatrics, it became clear to me in the general picture of this complexity that you describe, and really came clearly through the conversation, that, you know, we've grown to understand that the set on the New York Stock Exchange is a TV set, that nothing really happens there, and the NASDAQ set is just a photo op for people, and that's all kind of a charade. But it became clear to me that even the people talking about the market on these financial channels and the ups and downs of the various indices is also kind of a charade, that it's not really happening there at all.
It's not happening there at all. It's funny. It's like we cling to this old picture of what the stock market is without actually getting our minds about around what it really is. And what it really is the black boxes scattered across New Jersey. And the people who were putting themselves on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ physically to pretend like they're inside the market, they might as well be in Denver. I mean, they're not, they're nowhere near what's happening. What's happening is happening on the level of the algorithm. So
the conspiratorial analysis could be those people are hired to be on TV so that the pensioners in Florida will have something to watch so that they don't sell and drive the market down. It could be.
That's not a great leap to make.
It's
not so far-fetched, except that, you know, like a lot of things that look like conspiracies in America, even in America financial life, or things that just kind of happen by accident and everybody's makes everybody comfortable, and nobody really thinks of it as a conspiracy. But it is true that a false picture of the markets is conveyed every day by financial news networks, not really consciously, intentionally. But it's just you can't really – there's no picture of the other thing. How do you put an algorithm on TV? Mm-hmm. You know, what you really need to know about the market if you're an investor is when I hit the button on my computer to say buy or sell, where does it go? What's the code that determines how it's executed? Is it – for example, I was talking the other day with someone who used to write code for a high-frequency trading firm. And he said, we had code that if you want to buy 1,000 shares of Microsoft, the code was really smart in using the first 500 shares of your purchase to buy really stupidly to drive the price of Microsoft up. So you're chasing the market up. And then with the second 500 shares, we would short to you at a high price Microsoft, knowing it was going to come back down. So how do you get to that truth? The only way you get to that truth is if you examine the code. I don't know who's examining the code.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. But yeah. It's unless you're actually got people who can read computer code and connect it to the reality of the marketplace, you have no ability to evaluate it. And so with all this nonsense on the television set is a distraction.
What's in your mattress?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what's in my mattress. You know what keeps me sane?
Yeah.
I do have a possibly naive sense that having gone through this trauma so recently, that the individuals, even if they're badly incentivized, are being either watched a little differently or behaving a little differently just because nobody actually wants to have a financial crisis.
No.
Right? It's not like it's anybody's great interest to have one. It may be in their interest to do the things that lead to one, but they don't actually looking to create one. I own shares in Berkshire Hathaway, and I think if it all goes really bad, Warren Buffett ends up making a killing. So he's my hedge. Warren Buffett sits there always with a huge pile of cash waiting to buy people at distressed prices. So that's the only way I stay sane.
Well done. Michael Lewis, best-selling author of Liar's Poker, Moneyball, The Blind Side, The Big Short, and other books. His most recent book is Flash Boys.